Oh man, guys, this week the episode is absolute fire with my buddy Billy Kangas. He is a director at Hope Clinic in Ypsilanti. He does just an amazing amount of good in our community, and on top of that, he is thoughtful, purposeful, deep. This episode, maybe more than any other that we're going to do, dives into some theology, and I am excited for you to hear it, and I really just don't want to give anything away about it because it's just that good. So here is my buddy Billy Kangas. Billy Kangas, welcome to the Love Well podcast, my friend.
I am so glad to be here.
Your exuberance is overwhelming. one of the things I appreciate about you is that you're one of the most even keel people that I think I've ever met. I don't think I've ever seen you get like, even when you've been talking passionately, you're still very like, we're right here. Calm.
Not going to take you anywhere you don't want to go.
That's right. All right. So let's, for the sake of the, you know, two or three listeners to this podcast.
Hey, guys.
One of which probably have no idea who you are. So let's give them a little scent, little taste of the Billy Kangas experience. We're currently... Let's go right now. Let's start now, and we'll go back in history a little bit.
Oh, sure.
So, where are you serving right now?
I'm at the Hope Clinic in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Nice. And what do you do here at Hope?
Well, I'll tell you what Hope is all about.
Yes.
And I got my hands in all the spindly baskets, if you will. But what I do is a little bit less important. Hope Clinic is a faith-based service agency. We provide free care for those who are in need. We've got four main areas. So we provide free medical care for the uninsured and dental care for the uninsured. We also have the largest free food program in the city. So we offer groceries almost every day of the week, meals almost every day of the week, as well as emergency food, grocery delivery. We have a farm stand with fresh produce, so lots and lots of food. And then we have other services that we call care and prayer. So that includes things like our free laundromat, or we have a baby program that offers diapers and wipes. We've got a mental health care program or social work. Basically trying to come around people and say, how do we provide for the needs of our neighbors in need? What makes us distinct is, yeah, our faith values, the free factor, and really the fact that most of the work that's done here is done by volunteers. So it allows us to really multiply the impact, because we don't have to pay the physicians. We don't have to pay the people who are preparing the meals every day. It empowers the church to be more disciples in the world. And so that's part of our Christian identity, is recognizing, yeah, God has called us to serve those in need. And it's really important that those who are in need get served. But it's also really important that disciples of Jesus Christ are engaged in doing that service. And so we empower that as well, which I find really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Just pulling in today. So here we are, 2:00 on a Tuesday. The parking lot is jam-packed. Because of all the COVID stuff, right, the lobby's closed, so I'm kind of hanging out. There are a couple of guys hanging out, waiting for appointments and different things, like, It amazes me that on a Tuesday at 2:00, you know, the Hope Clinic parking lot is full. You would think that it would be kind of quiet, but it's jamming out there. So what, just for kicks and giggles, what is going on right now at 2:00 on a Tuesday that has the parking lot jammed up?
So we've got our medical clinic that's going on.
Okay.
Normally we would have our dental clinic going, but that's not even going today.
Okay.
We've got food distribution happening, so people are grabbing groceries. We've got people who are going to be coming in, so that you may have had the first few that are coming in to prep the meal for this evening. We've got our eye clinic in full swing at the moment. And then you've got our social workers who are just meeting people where they're at and trying to help them take the next step. So they might be interacting in one of our programs themselves, or people making appointments to meet with a licensed counselor or something to help them navigate. Yeah. Honestly, it's I guess there's so much going on. But at the same time, it's just really one thing, which is trying to encounter the person who comes to our door with open arms and meet their needs, whatever they might be, to treat them as a whole person with complex needs, with physical needs, emotional needs, even spiritual needs, mm-hmm. and trying to be people who take very seriously the care for the whole person, which is great.
So one of the things that I thought was so interesting, when you and I were chatting, it might have been you, me, and Mike at some point during this whole crazy COVID year, mm-hmm. And we were just kind of asking, how are things going, you know, and I think both of us kind of had the perception that you're going to say something like, well, because of the pandemic, man, we're really struggling, like things are just, like, we're having a hard time and all these things. And while there were certainly bumps, I think one of the things that surprised both Mike and I, you were like, well, because of this, we've now had to get creative. And we've like it feels like in the last year, all I've seen is greater creativity coming out of this place, more opening more doors, more avenues for people to connect here. Whereas mm-hmm. there were a lot, it seemed, and again, it may just be a bad perception or a misconception, but it seemed like a lot of places were like, we gotta scale back. Here it seems like you guys went the other way.
We definitely did. And I think it's natural. When you hit a bump in the road, when adversity comes your way, you have a choice to put on the brakes or to try to get over it. And we try to get over it. We try to move. And we've seen tremendous amounts of growth and impact. Our programs are serving more people than ever. We're seeing more people serving. Just so much amazing things are happening. And it really was because we were forced to get creative and in ways that pushed us out. You know, I was thinking about that this very afternoon because our AC is down in a couple wings of the building right now.
Okay.
And this had happened to us before. And it was kind of a crisis because we're like, how are we going to have pantry visits without AC? People are going to be sweltering. Well, it's not an issue now because we have it so streamlined that people are able to get food without even needing to come in. We are starting pantry visits again, but our team is just so agile. Something comes our way, we know, oh, it's like, we can handle that. Whether it's people can't show up, so we started, food delivery, or just increasing the number of days that are available. We started the eye clinic during COVID, which is pretty crazy.
That's
and it was
wild.
Like the perfect thing because, you know, we were able to do this telemedicine stuff.
Yeah.
And now we've got permanent telemedicine in our medical clinic, which we didn't have before. So, you know, each challenge forces you to ask the question, are we doing things the way that they should be done? Can we make it better? Are we optimizing our resources? And in the case of our team, this really, it was a nice little, shot in the arm to get us to think, okay, let's see what will it take to serve everyone who still has needs in the midst of a complex situation.
Right.
And what we wound up with is a stronger infrastructure, a stronger team, more flexibility, more services, and it's been great.
That's amazing. Yeah, well, when Lincoln Consolidated Schools hired their new superintendent, I don't even think he was necessarily officially hired. I think he was still the interim at this point when COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him on the phone, and he said, Dan, this isn't an educational crisis. This is a humanitarian crisis. And so, like, I watched them approach it. It sounds like same thing, where it was just like, the needs are bigger, so we gotta go, like, it's like, this is what Hope Clinic is designed to do, is to fill those gaps. So, when you think about, I think, you know, people think about the food clinic, or the food clinic, the food pantry, mm-hmm. right? What is a surprising thing about the food pantry that people might not realize?
Here's the thing that I think often surprises people, and it's basically what I prefer that folks do, which is focus on quality rather than quantity. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think, I want to give to a food pantry, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy the cheapest calories I can find. Mm. I'll buy a whole bunch of rice and beans or something, or I'll buy some off-brand bulk something or other.
Right.
And if we had people who were starving, that would probably be a good approach. But what we have is people who are food insecure. And sometimes cheap calories are less effective at accomplishing that kind of the whole person care. Part of it is, you know, cheap calories are really bad for you oftentimes. They're often super processed or whatever. And so a lot of things that go with food insecurity are malnutrition or poor nutrition. So you might have somebody who's food insecure but extremely overweight.
Yeah.
And people don't think about that.
Right.
The other side of that is there's a poverty of identity that many of our clients face as well, where they've basically been living on second bests and leftovers, and if they can show up to a place where they're given fresh whole foods, where they're given name brand products, where they're given high quality ingredients, that actually can benefit them on a psychological level. It can benefit them with their self-identity. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody says, would you rather have me show up with, you know, 5 boxes of off-brand cornflakes or 1 box of, you know, some really nice thing? Show up with a really nice thing. Part of that's an act of faith on my part. But we've never run out of food. You know, when people come and they're looking for food, nobody has gone hungry. If we were in a situation where our shelves were totally bare and I was really worried that we'd have to send folks away, then, you know, my strategy might change. But by and large, we've always had enough. It's almost miraculous. It's kind of like that story with the loaves and the fishes.
Right.
I kind of see the loaves and the fishes every day.
Yeah.
We'll be running low on something, then our truck will show up with that one item and just unload a bunch of that. And it's cool to see.
Yeah.
So I guess I just threw myself on God and say, all right, well, if God's going to make sure that we have enough, let's make sure that we're bringing our best. Let's bring our first fruits. And so when I encourage people to go shopping for it, say, choose the stuff that you like, your favorite foods, the things that are a treat for you. Donate those to the pantry. And I think a lot of people are surprised by that because we think in terms of quantity rather than quality when it comes to pantries. But quality is a really important dimension.
That was, you had talked about that when a number of us were doing a tour here, and it was one of those things that struck a chord, right? Of, bring the, you know, spend the extra dollar, and get, you know, the Cocoa Puffs, like the real deal with the stupid bird on
it,
as opposed to chocolatey Corn Crispy Puffs that are in the random bag that, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I saw this today when I went home to make my kids lunch, where I made the mac and cheese. And my 4-year-old's like, which kind is it? He wanted to, like, check the box, you know, because he knows he likes Kraft and he likes Annie's. And he knows it's Kraft today, so he's happy.
Yeah.
And that's, if my kids are weird and picky about things like that, you know, most people's kids are going to be.
Yeah.
And it's a gift to be able to give that dignity, to give normalcy to children, where, I mean, kids knows this stuff more than I do. And it's I think it's really awesome. We see people who are really thankful when they're able to get quality food. Sometimes they're getting stuff that they can never afford to buy.
Right.
And it's a huge treat. It's a huge blessing. People break down in tears sometimes when they're able to get just some really special thing they haven't had in years because mm-hmm. someone donated one of their favorite items to the clinic or to the pantry, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's that, you know, love your neighbor as yourself thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're not going out and, like you said, if my kids get goofy about that kind of stuff too, where it's like, you know, I don't like, okay, so how's this for first world problems, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of one of our little staples that we kind of have, we've got older kids, mm-hmm. and so one's, you know, gone now, and one's, you know, she turns 18 at the end of the summer, and so we're in a little different stage of life, but, you know, one of the kind of go-to staples in our house are Clif Bars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the chocolate brownie Clif Bar.
Oh, okay.
But there is a line of the chocolate brownie Clif Bars that have a different packaging. Like, instead of the mountain climber, it's a mountain biker.
Oh.
And apparently, the mountain biker ones are nasty. The mountain climber ones are delicious. I can't tell the difference.
Interesting.
My 17-year-old daughter can tell the difference.
I'm going to have to go buy a box of each and see.
So we only have the one and not the other.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's dumb, but it's like, yeah, that just makes so much sense to think about it in terms of, if you were buying this for your own family, what brand would you buy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you buying the blue box, or are you buying the off-brand Spartan, you know, Save-A-Lot thing? Mm-hmm. And yeah, the dignity aspect of it makes sense. So, all right, you and I met
mm-hmm.
at a place called Cultivate.
That is true.
What in the world were you doing at Cultivate?
I was starting it. Cultivate, it still exists, but I'm not nearly as involved anymore. So I'm going to speak of it in terms of maybe the past tense.
Because it's had different iterations over the last number of years. And so, you know, when you got here, you guys had a very specific kind of focus of what you guys were doing.
So, yeah, I moved back here to Michigan, where I'm from, to start Cultivate with a couple friends of mine. And our vision was to create a community space. It was based around three values, craft, community, and cause. So craft was, because Ryan and I were super nerdy mm-hmm. about, like, beverages.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have, you know, the best beer selection, the best coffee, you know, super high, mm-hmm. high quality stuff in a place. So that was partially motivational to me. And that's another piece of that quality, dignity thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wanting to serve the community with stuff that's really good. The community piece was, we wanted to create a space where the whole community could connect with each other and where you could start to build relationships with your neighbor kind of naturally. So we had a lot of community events that brought people together.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to create a space that was really open. So we never charged to rent kind of spaces. We never shut things down. We kind of let people have it as their own space that they could reserve chunks of it and kind of celebrate their life milestones with people.
Yeah.
And it was really awesome. And then the third part was cause. So we founded it wanting it to be oriented around making the world a better place. And when I was at the helm, the cause we were really focused on was addressing food security in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal was that we would help support the underlying or address the underlying causes of hunger in our community.
Yeah.
So that by 2030, we could eliminate food insecurity. That was the dream and the goal. And we did that by really partnering very closely with a lot of nonprofits in the area, including Hope Clinic, which is part of the reason I got plugged in here and wound up pivoting over here. Mm-hmm. But it was a really awesome thing to be involved with.
Yeah.
And I think really addressed kind of the three fundamental values that I am always trying to think about. It's how do we bring together a community around a cause and to do it in a way that really serves everybody,
right,
who comes to the table. Now, there's a lot of challenges that come with that. One of the things I'm struggling with now is, you know, we provided tremendously delicious coffee and things like that to our clients. And I'd always felt like a little bit of sadness that, you know, there's people in the community who can't afford a $5 cup of coffee.
Right.
So one of the things we're working on here at Hope is, you know, how do we really elevate all of the experiences, including the coffee experience in our lobby or whatever, as we reopen, so that we can create a space that really provides dignity and excellence. And part of it is just, I guess fundamentally, everything I'm involved with, I want to have a dimension of joy. Mm. And joy is, it doesn't mean that everything you do has to be out of the park. It means everything you do shouldn't diminish human dignity. It shouldn't harm people. It shouldn't frustrate people. It should be good. But every once in a while, it's good to punctuate something with excellence.
Yeah.
Where somebody goes, oh, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And so that's the value I'm always trying to bring forth here. The value I was always trying to bring forth at Cultivate was, okay, can we make sure that if someone walks through the door, nothing makes them angry, sad, feel like they're unimportant, but that we surprise them with something where they have something that's amazing.
Yeah.
Coffee is great. Beer is great because actually if you look at the range of things in the world, you can have one of the best cups of coffee in the world for $5.
Right.
You try to have like the best scotch or something like that.
Yeah, it's not going to be $5.
So you can actually punctuate some pretty significant joy on a budget with something like coffee or with beer. I mean, they do have things that kind of go extreme, but you can get some really good stuff without going crazy.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons I'm attracted to those kinds of things. It's basically saying, can we take enough time and care with the everyday that allows us to find joy, to find a sense of happiness. And I think it's hard to foster that in folks, but if you can just create a few little moments. I mean, I was reading some research last night, in fact, that was looking at the happiness research there's this international happiness study. It was like 213 countries or something along those lines.
They
surveyed a whole bunch of people and looked at certain practices. And things like just a weekly gratitude, like a weekly gratitude journal can have tremendous impact.
Yeah.
It's like just once a week writing down a few things you're grateful for. Okay, well, what if once a day you had, you know, a cup of coffee that really was special, or once a week had
a cup of coffee.
And it slowed you down enough to recognize that like there's some goodness in your life. Like, that's huge.
Yep.
I could go on and on about these little factors, but I think helping people even take a small step towards gratitude or a small step towards recognizing their own dignity or providing dignity for somebody else can be incredibly transformative. Mm-hmm. I feel so blessed because I have these moments throughout every day, it seems like. I feel like the most blessed person in the world because there's so many kind of just moments of delight and gratitude and work that's meaningful and good cups of coffee in my life or whatever. So it's good. It's good.
I'm curious, listening to you talk, how does joy and love, like how do you see those two concepts, those two ideas connect or touch one another? How do they play off of each other?
So I think love fundamentally needs to be focused outward. Mm. Otherwise, it's just narcissism. That's one of the reasons I'm a Trinitarian.
Yeah.
If God is love, God needs to have an object outwardly to love. And so, so I think if you're approaching love, you always have to be thinking, okay, this is for love to find expression. It needs to be oriented towards the good of another.
Mm-hmm.
Joy, I think, is almost like the fluid dynamics that occur between the beloved and the love, and the lover. If the love is received by the beloved, I think joy is just kind of that thing that touches both.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're experiencing joy in your life, there's almost always someone who expressed some kind of care, usually in an unexpected way, some kind of love. It might have been, just a love of the thing that they're doing, wanting to serve someone else. So there are things that I experience joy in that, you know, they're gifts from people who will never meet me. You know, I find joy in a product that's well designed. I find joy in an environment that's well thought of. But, you know, that person put love into that environment, wanting to serve whoever walked in or developed that product or whatever, wanting to serve. And you can tell. Like, if you're experiencing joy, it's a pretty good indicator that somewhere along the line, someone put love into something for you. And if you're wanting to love somebody, a good indicator if you're doing a good job is, are people experiencing joy? Yeah, what you're doing? If I say I love my wife and she's always mad at me, like, maybe I need to
make an adjustment here.
Make an adjustment in how I'm implementing that love. That love isn't really connecting well with the beloved.
Yeah.
And like, so it's almost like joy is what hits the indicator lights that love has been sent and received effectively when joy happens. Now, maybe that's not a universal rule, but you put me on the spot here.
I know, right? So I sent you 3 questions, I think, and I've asked none of them yet. So, you know. That was a good answer for on the spot, my friend. Can't even imagine what would happen if I gave you a week to think about something like that.
I'm overanalyzing. I give you like a... here's the Greek definition
that's right.
The word joy.
That's
and
right.
How it's related to the senses of love that you might find in Greek.
That's right.
Now, in its Latin translation...
Back to the Aramaic.
Don't give me too much time.
Oh, so good. All right. So, how do you define love?
How do I define love? That's a tough one.
I did give you this one. So,
and I was like, how am I going to answer that?
Yeah.
Because love is one of those words that is used in so many ways.
Mm.
It's almost like it's undefinable, or it needs to be polyvalent or something like that.
Yeah. In some ways in our culture, it's almost lost its meaning, I feel like, right? Like, you know, everybody loves everything. It's like, you know, there doesn't seem to be much distinguishing between loving pizza and loving, you know, your kid or something like
right.
that.
Right. And it's partially an issue with the English language.
Yeah.
That we use the word love in context that many cultures would have different terminology for.
Yep.
So, you know, the experience of affection that I have for pizza, which is by no means inconsequential, but it's a very different experience of affection that I have for my brother or for my wife or
right.
for my children. And in all of these things, what I really think it is it's rooted in I guess I would say love fundamentally is a part of speech, should be an action verb, you know, it should be a word that expresses an action. So if you're going to say, okay, what is this? Is this a noun? Is it a feeling? Of course, yeah. You know, love is something that we experience. But fundamentally, love is expressed in how we behave, how we act, how we interact with the world around us.
So are you saying that the great DC Talk was right?
Love is a verb.
When they said love is a verb?
I think that
you're welcome for the earworm, though.
They're fundamentally right about that, for sure. Now, yeah. Love is also a noun.
Yeah.
And you could probably adjective it, or,
that's right,
or whatever it is. You can use it in almost every form. But if you wanted to kind of get fundamental,
yeah,
on you know, can there be love without action?
Hmm.
I would say, if love doesn't have an action, then it's usually a corruption of love, or it's incomplete love, or it's a false love, or, yeah, or whatever. And that, if I was going to define it, it's a love that's really, it's an action that's taken for the sake of another.
Mm.
And so that doesn't handle pizza very well, but that's, yeah, not the kind of love that I'm like particularly, right, interested in. So,
right,
let's put pizza on the table and say, okay, I have affection for pizza. But when I talk about love, and if I wanted to define love, and if I wanted to get into the root of it, what's the most important kind of love that we should define? Well, it's the kind of love that people have for one another, that is an expression of the nature of God.
Yeah.
You know, 1 John tells us that God is love. And if that's, I mean, the fundamental positive attribution that we can make about God, then it's probably the fundamental positive attribution that is gifted to us as image bearers of God. Mm. What does it mean to be made in the image of God? It means that we are people who are capable of expressing love towards creation,
yeah,
towards one another, towards God. So the ways that we reflect the nature of God, either consciously or unconsciously, towards ourselves, towards others, towards the world that we're in, I think that would be maybe my definition of love.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I guess, anyway, and this fundamentally assumes a Christian cosmology,
yeah,
but it's not assuming a Christian intent. There's people who love without, you know, maybe knowing that they're participating in some fundamental way with the nature of God.
Yeah.
But I think that is truly what it is. You know, there's something that's built into us that that participates in God's nature, in God's action, in fact. So all of creation participates in the nature of God. We share in God's being, if you will.
Right.
So, you know, Aquinas would say a rock has a participation in the nature of God, because a rock exists and God exists. Both,
yeah,
share that fundamental ontology. But humans are unique in a certain way, because we are allowed to participate not only in sharing God's being, but in God's action.
Mm.
And so as we participate either knowingly or unknowingly in God's action in the world, this is an expression of love, if I was going to try to define it. But
so it's dude, I am reading, reading a book right now called The Patient Ferment of the Early Church.
Mm-hmm.
So good. It's so good. And what the guy is kind of just walking through, like, you know, early church writings, looking at, you know, kind of that, not, you know, not the X timeline, but like that next generation, right? So, mm-hmm, like your very early church fathers, looking at the early church before it got really instituted, pre-Constantine, right?
Oh, yeah, you're hanging out with Polycarp.
Yeah, all those guys, Clement, yeah, these dudes. And one of the things that is, and that he is hitting home on it, because as he's kind of walking through, like how the process worked for people to move into the fellowship of believers, right? Like, their question wasn't, what do you believe? Their question wasn't, have you prayed the sinner's prayer? They didn't ask those questions. When you became a catechumen, the question was, have their habits and lives changed to so align with the life of Christ? Like, that was the question. And the person who is mentoring them was responsible for answering the question, and not even the catechumen themselves. So they're like, you know, they were so much more concerned about how we are living, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, does the way we live look different than everybody else out here? And it's like, you know, you start thinking about love like that. You start thinking about love as the action, as living into the world for the sake of others. And it's like no wonder we've lost so much of the plot, because we've gotten so concerned about, I just want to know what do you believe, you know?
You know, the Great Commission is one of these examples where I sometimes wonder, are we reading the same Bible?
Yeah.
Because I think some people read, you know, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey all that I have commanded you. Well, I think that a lot of times people forget the second part of that teaching them. It's like, okay, teaching them. And then they forget, what are we supposed to teach them?
That's right.
Obedience to the commands of Christ. Well, the commands of Christ, well, love God and love neighbor.
Right.
But they go, no, we've got to teach them. We've got to teach them the spiritual laws. We've got to teach them the...
this confession and that confession. And
you know, why, you know, Northern Baptists are better than Southern Baptists. whatever it is.
Which directional Baptist is the best?
What eschatological framework is most in line with the... interpretation of scripture.
That's right. Are you a tulip or are you a petunia? Which is it?
And for me, it's like, that's why I love working at Hope. It's because we actually have a tremendous number of Christians that come together.
Yeah.
We've got Catholics and Orthodox and Lutherans and Methodists and Presbyterians, Evangelicals and Mainliners and the whole gamut.
Yeah.
And I love it because we say, well, I might disagree on what is the underlying cosmological ontology of the sacraments, or I might disagree with you on what is the best framework for understanding the saving, atoning work of Christ on the cross. I might disagree with you about some questions around how we behave towards one another in terms of government or what laws we should enact. There's all sorts of things I can disagree on. But what we all agree on is, when the church is the church, if somebody is hungry, we feed them. When the church is the church, if somebody's sick, we care for them. If somebody's lonely or on the margins, we accompany them. And we can all agree on those things. Mm-hmm. And for me, having a greater unity in love is so much more inspirational than disagreeing about some of this other stuff, where the Jesus that I know and love seemed to be a lot more concerned about loving God and loving neighbor. And, you know, Jesus never gave us a systematic theology.
Well, he might have. That might have been what he was writing in the dirt.
It is true.
And then he wiped it away, so I don't know.
But thankfully, Wayne Grudem came along.
That's right. And was able to pull out.
Figure it out.
That's right.
So it's all good. And I'm not saying any of this to, like, to discount the actual importance. I think studying theology is wonderful. I've probably studied theology more than anybody that you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if that becomes the most important part of what my faith is, and I think I've lost it. And maybe it's because I've studied so much theology that I realize. It's like G.K. Chesterton said, the importance of getting a good education is not taking education or educated people too seriously.
Yep.
And I think the more the church can be freed from I guess, the fears and anxieties and the gatekeepers that keep them from loving, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So if there's anything I want to encourage people to do, it's, you know, if you're going to fail, fail on the side of love.
Yep.
If you're going to be wrong, it's much better to be wrong trying to care for those in need than it is.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people where it's where they're wrestling with something, and it's like, I love that you're wrestling with this, but let's be clear. I am pretty sure when you when you stand before Jesus, he's not going to say, Billy, I wish you had judged more people. Like, that's not going to be how that conversation goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be celebrating how you loved people, and those places where we didn't love people well is where we're going to have to wrestle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the places where we're going to bump into some stuff. So how do you, all right, so you know, you're in this role, you're giving, you're serving, you're loving consistently. I mean, your job is to love people.
Sure.
So how do you keep your tanks full? How do you keep that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've done it successfully some days and not so successfully other days. But a huge part of it is really paying attention. Love is not something that you can afford to put on autopilot.
Yeah.
So for me, a huge part of it is taking time every day to connect with the love of God and to connect with the day ahead of me and the day that's behind me.
Hmm.
So I have a pretty strong commitment to doing spiritual practices. So every day I'll do morning prayer, do the office of readings, which is doing some psalms and reading of different writings and part of scripture, and a daily examine. That's probably the fundamental thing for me to do. The examine is basically, I go through and I do a little journaling on the previous day,
mm-hmm.
mostly looking for, you know, where did things go well? Where could things improve? What am I thankful for? And then I turn around and I look at the day ahead and I pray through that and I say, okay, here are the things I need to do today. Here are the meetings I've got today. Invite God into those things that I might participate better with the love of God today. Set my heart on things, and I go through my prayer list, and I also have a time of just giving thanks to God for who He's made me to be, recognizing where my strengths are, that I might lean into those things, kind of affirming my role, but also recognizing I don't need to be everything to everyone. I just need mm-hmm. to be faithful with the opportunities that are ahead of me. So that fills my tank up really well. It's also really important to kind of take care of yourself, to get exercise, to get sleep, to do those sorts of things so that you're not trying to serve from a place of depletion.
Yeah.
And that's super, super important.
Yeah.
Because that's my loving superpower is well rested and having plenty of water and having yep. exercise, whatever. If I'm coming at somebody and I'm not feeling like I'm depleted, I can give a lot more readily. So I don't know if that's more, I don't know if it's a less holy approach or something, but I think it's really practical. Take care of yourself, and then you have hopefully an overflow of things, and really turn to God. And I try to reset each day. We open up in prayer here, and every time we get together to pray, I do basically say, God, give me that heart of the prodigal father who is looking with eager expectation to offer radical generosity. And I need to remind myself often of that. It's very easy to get sucked into some issue or some situation or whatever Or, you know, sometimes people don't want to receive love in the way you want to give it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, every once in a while you're offering somebody a gift, something for free, and, you know, their heart is wounded and they are not experiencing joy. And it can be really easy to be frustrated in those circumstances or to be defensive or whatever, but recognizing that that the love that we offer, ultimately, when it's done out of the heart of God, when we never perfectly love out of the heart of God, but as we're approaching that, it's done without expectation. The love of God that was demonstrated for us in Christ, Jesus didn't offer his life or come into our world because he needed to be affirmed.
Yeah.
He did it because we needed to be saved. And so the more that I can move away from my hang-ups, the better, which means I have to come into the situation pretty much awesome.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm coming into a situation where I feel great about my life and I'm just loving because I have abundance rather than because I need to take something, get affirmation or feel good about myself or whatever. In those cases, love can go off the rails really easily. And I think we've all experienced that where we're trying to do something special for someone and it's not received well. And then we start to be resentful or to be angry or whatever. So for me, it's so very important that I come as a whole person to the work that I do rather than somebody who's trying to fill a hole or a gap in myself. And so, solid spiritual practice, healthy relationships, healthy habits, all that kind of stuff is key.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just get yourself perfect and then...
Then you're good. All right, so I am convinced that that learning to love well is caught, not taught. So who has modeled this for you? That you caught it from them. Whose disease, whose love disease did you catch?
Well, you know, I have two absolutely wonderful parents, and that's been fundamental to me for being just healthy. Like I said, you love better if you come at the world healthily, and thankfully, you know. I survived childhood without too many pathologies or anything like that, and with two great examples of what loving looks like. A huge part of it has been just my faith. I think maybe not so much individual people, but being a part of a faith community has been hugely important.
Yeah,
the fact that I have a place that reminds me of the words of Jesus. Kind of forces me to re-encounter God. It gives me different perspectives on this. And when I'm weak or strong or doubting or feeling burnt out or spiritually dry, that it gives me words and prayers that can help carry me. So that's been tremendous in my own life, for sure. And, you know, my wife is a fantastic influence on my life. She's probably forced me into holiness more than most people. The only people who've forced it more have been my children, who are not always exemplars of love, but they really do draw the practice of love in a very practical way. And what they do is they tear apart your ulterior motives and your, you know, children are just, they're a school of love itself. I always tell, I'm a Catholic, and so I always tell my priests, you guys need to figure out some way of finding someone to love, like children, because there's, I mean, I'm sure there's a grace in that vocation as well. But for me, marriage and children have been the greatest education I've had on how to love. And there's tons of other people, honestly. Who have been great examples to me. And I don't think we have time to go through the Rolodex of influences, but friends, mentors, you know, having people in your life that love better than you is really important. Mm. And maybe they don't love in every way better than you, but if there's somebody, and, you know, really being intentional about where you spend your time. Not to say you always need to spend time with saints, but the more saints you have in your life, people who are, you know, really living living out love is huge. Mm-hmm. So I do try to make sure that I take time to spend with, and if I find a guy who I said, man, this guy is really exemplifying love, I'll try to get lunch with that guy more often, or you know, invite them to do a project, or just give them a call or whatever.
Right.
I have a block of time in my calendar every Monday, which I call mentor time, which is basically I'm going to reach out to somebody who's inspiring me, and I just want to make sure I'm giving them a call, scheduling a lunch, setting up a time, and just a reminder every week. Hey, you can't do this alone.
Right.
You've got to. There's a whole group of people in the world that are better at loving than you are, that are, you know, working and doing things that can inspire you and inform you. You should spend time with those folks.
Yep.
Not to say you shouldn't spend time with other folks too. A lot of the work that we do here is spent with people who are complicated and maybe aren't people I should model my life on. That's just the nature of services. You spend time with some messy people.
Yep.
But especially when you're spending a lot of time with messy people, you have to make time to really give enough space for positive influences, people who are loving, people who are really living into dimensions of the Jesus way that you can learn from. And I have a lot I can still learn for sure.
Yeah. All right. So last question. This is the like out of left field question.
Sure.
Especially if you haven't listened to previous podcast episodes in this little series that I've been doing. So here it goes. You ready?
I hope so.
All right. So you need to kind of get fired up. You need to kind of get like try to help you get into a good head, heart space kind of thing. What are like 3 to 5 songs that you're gonna load up on your phone or iPod or whatever it is?
Oh man, it really depends on where I'm at. I'm a musician. This is a very unfair question.
I'm not loving well in this moment.
because I can't really choose 5 very well.
Yeah, it's all right.
Because I'm always going to be thinking or working on something differently, you know?
Yeah.
So let me think of what I've been listening to lately.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Bach.
Uh-huh.
There's something about Johann Sebastian Bach which puts me in a good space.
Yeah.
So that's maybe not like get pumped up and like jamming.
Good space, man. Fill your soul. That's all right. What's something by him that you're like?
Everything. I mean, it depends on where I'm at.
Yeah.
I like a lot of stuff. I'm trying to think of anything else that I'd be jamming out to.
Yeah.
It really, my moods shift a tremendous amount. Sometimes I'm in the mood for something that'll get me pumped up.
Yeah.
But it just shifts. Every day I'm listening to something different. I listen to a lot of like instrumental music just to kind of create a flow or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry, I don't have the perfect playlist for you.
All right, so here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna bug you sometime the next week.
I could send you my playlist.
There you go. Do it. Send me a playlist. Because here's what I'm gonna do is, I'm gonna I'm going to create like a little 5-song playlist that this podcast episode will be attached to.
Okay.
So that way, you know.
I got more than 5 songs.
That's fine. I'll pick some.
Well, let me go through it, and I'll see if I can pick 5. So you want 5 songs.
Yeah, give me 5 songs.
That are
like the Billy Kangas experience.
Okay. I can probably manage that.
Sweet.
Are there any restrictions?
No restrictions.
Only CCM music?
Oh, good Lord, no. Well, no. Oh, honestly, I can't even tell you the last time I listened to CCM music.
Uh-huh.
I was just talking to somebody the other day. Derek Webb is probably my favorite quote-unquote CCM, and he probably, even putting that out into the universe just now, he probably got more bald.
And he just unfollowed you on Twitter.
And he probably just unfollowed me on Twitter or something like that, yeah.
I can get you 5 songs.
Sweet.
I'll just have to, I have a system of anytime something's flagging, I throw it on a playlist, so it's pretty long.
That's all right. I love it.
Go back and curate a list. So what is? So this is about songs to pump you up for loving others.
Yeah, or just or even just like the ones, you know, when you just need to. All right, I gotta kind of, you know, I kind of gotta refill a little bit here. You know, you're gonna put that in. You're gonna put a couple of those songs in your ears, and it just kind of gets you. All right. Yep.
Yeah. There's an artist. I listen to a lot, and it's not really music. I mean, it's music, but he does this, and it's not CCM either, but it's Christian. It's this, he does these chants. It's like Patrick something or other.
Huh.
And beautiful chants of just traditional Christian prayers, and I often will just put those on while I'm doing contemplative prayer. That's wonderful. So I'm leaning kind of into some of the more religious music I listen to. I listen to a lot of chants and things like that. There's plenty of non-religious music I listen to as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can throw that out there. But I start my day often with this guy's chants.
Mm.
For me, it's kind of this contemplative space or whatever.
For some reason, that doesn't even surprise me. Like, if there is one person in my life that, if someone were to say, name one person who listens to chant, you would probably be at the top of that list.
Sure. I love good chants. And so he has this version of the Exultant.
That might have to be the title of this podcast episode. I love good chant with Billy Kangas.
So I'll give you some background. There's a couple things. He does this Jesus Prayer rendition, which is really good. He does in English. He has a Russian version as well. And that's, I listen to probably a lot, but there's this Exultant prayer. Are you familiar with the Exultant?
Mm-mm.
So, it's this hymn. It only happens in the Easter Vigil. And it's just, you know, for me, it's peak liturgy. You know, for me, I look forward to it all year in order to experience it. And so, he has got a recording of it, and sometimes I'll just turn that on. And I absolutely love that. And but I'll look at some other stuff as well, and I'll throw it your way.
I love it. I love it. This might be the most eclectic playlist.
I imagine it will.
This is such a departure from previous playlists, which have included, you know, Van Halen.
Sure.
There's been a lot of Van Halen. A lot of the people in my life love Van Halen. I'm learning.
I certainly will put on Panama every once in a while.
Who doesn't?
It's one of my go-tos. I don't know if it's my get pumped for loving people. I think it's more like whenever there's a word in my life that I want to sing loudly, I just do it to the tune of Panama.
Daniel Rose! Daniel Rose! Oh, so good. So good. All right. You guys, we can't go anywhere from that. That is the best. So... until Billy, thanks for being with me, and until next time, love well, my friends.